Hello and welcome to the Full Course Show Jumping Podcast. I'm Will Fletcher. So normally we start with a news roundup of what's been happening over the past week, and unfortunately, with starting there, we come with some really terrible news across the world of show jumping, where Steve Gerdat's Albafeira's Bianca unfortunately had to be put down. After suffering a brain tumor, which is terrible news for Steve, his team, family, the Swiss team, as you know, Bianca was such a fantastic horse, winning individual bronze at the Europeans and so many top results all over the past few years. Jumped six Nations Cup double clears, which is absolutely insane. And winning plenty of Grand Prix and was just extremely consistent in every single top Grand Prix. So it is a really devastating loss for Steve and across the world of show jumping, as I said. It is really horrible to hear that as one horse that would be in with a really strong contention for the Olympics is another one, unfortunately. Has been lost. So, yeah, many commiserations to Steve and his team. And another little bit of sad news, not quite as sad, but it really is gutting for Henrik von Eckermann to have to retire his best horse, Tovex Mary Lou, which has been a fantastic horse for him. Again, echoing a little bit what I said about Bianca, he's been Henrik's best horse. And you know, won Team Silver in the World Games at Trion, won Team Silver in the Europeans at Gothenburg, was the current sixth highest place combination in the world. So again, another horse which had serious Olympic contention that we won't be able to see because of injury is really, really sad to see. So again, thoughts and feelings go out to both Steve and Henrik at this time. But on a little bit of a lighter news, we'll move to Le Bourg, where the five-star Nations Cup was on last week. And Switzerland, spurred on by the tragic loss of Bianca, took the win pretty much the exact same day as hearing from that, which was a great thing to see if there's any solace to take. Martin Fuchs jumped double clear, and it over a really tough track. There was not so many double clears. They beat out Italy and Belgium, and then Britain. They finished fourth. A couple of really strong performances there. Emily Moffat jumping double clear on winning good, really, really pushing her Olympic contention to the forefront of Di Lampard's mind with that exceptional double clear. She's been going sneakily really well, and that has really highlighted how good a partnership that is. So that's one to look out for when it comes to Olympic selection. Ireland were fifth, just behind Britain. They were a little bit unlucky. They all of them jumped clear in the first round, and then everyone had four faults in the second round, which unfortunately doesn't hack it in the Nations Cup. Although all, I'm sure every horse and rider would be delighted with with their performance. It just happens that four faults do not win Nations Cups. You need to get those clear rounds on the board. In the Grand Prix, Nicolas Delmotte on Eurosur du Roc won. The French are really good there. They were first and second with Laurent Goffin finishing second. And Martin Fuchs, which I mentioned in the Nations Cup, jumping double clear. He was double clear and third in the Grand Prix. And he really seems to be retooling his horses because obviously Clooney, his best horse, is has been fantastic with individual gold and individual silver at the World Games and Europeans respectively. And behind that, he's got now has a really good bunch of 9 and 10 year old horses that are really, really stepping up into the top level of the sport. And he's going to be one to watch over the next few years as Clooney unfortunately ages, which obviously no one wants, as that has been a great horse for him over the years. But as that is now, I think 16, there's only going to be so many years left, but it's great for him that he's now managing to get a great team of horses behind him that will hopefully take over the reins after Clooney moves on. And then Bertram Allen has continued a really strong run of form, and he finished fourth in the Grand Prix there, clearing four on Harley van der Bishop. He's been flying recently. He's been popping up in all of these mentions. So that's got to be really great to hear for Ireland's Michael Blake before the Olympics. We'll go move on to the other Nations Cup on this week. That there was Uggerhavn in Denmark. And yeah, mainly the British I wanted to catch up on. They finished third. It went to a jump off. Denmark won. And you know, but during the main part of it, Joe Stockdale on his lovely horse, Casherel, jumped double clear, and he has rightfully earned a call up for the Nations Cup this week in Sopot, which it will be on today. No, Grand Prix is today, Nations Cup on Sunday, actually, how they run it in Sopot. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes because he's been doing excellent with Casherel over the past few weeks. So that step up to five star, I think, is well deserved and will be really interesting to do. Unfortunately, the water did cost Britain the win here. They had a couple of foot in the water that were very frustrating, I'm sure, for the chef to keep. But everyone played their part, everyone put in good rounds. Jackson Reed Stevenson was 4-4, Lily Freeman Atwood was 4 and clear, and Amy Ingalls didn't have the best first rounds, but pulled out a clear to put them into the jump off, where a three-way jump off, of which I was told was extremely fast. It's never easy being first to go in a jump off, where Lily, who is one of the fastest young riders in the world at the moment, just for this day just wasn't quite quick enough. But she, which I'm sure will probably never happen again, but it was very, very fast. So well done to everyone who was there. Last thing before we move on to Jeff Billington, I wanted to touch on South of England County Show. I don't usually bring up national shows in our roundup, but I went there this week and it was a really lovely experience. It was great to see people out in crowds again, and the show was really well done. Ground was great. Course designer Ben Townley put up some really great courses, and it was just a lovely experience. And it's great to have the county shows back because it was the first one since it's the first one I've been to anyway since Newbury in 2019, obviously because of coronavirus. So that was lovely to be there, and obviously it helps that I won the two big classes. So probably why I really enjoyed it. But anyway, on to Jeff Billington, who gives us some really great insight of his best horses over the over his career. So well, joining us on the podcast this week is Olympic show jumper Jeff Billington. How are we doing today, Jeff?
Yeah, fab. Thanks, Will. Yeah.
Brilliant. What have you been getting up to recently?
After teaching,
have you?
Lots of clinics, 8 hours a day. Just a real amateur riders. Never,
yeah.
Very rarely going over a meter high.
For people listening who might want to come for a lesson, like, where are you going in the next couple of weeks if any spaces are open?
You know, I haven't got my calendar in front of me. I know I'm at Market Drayton just down the road here tomorrow.
Might be a bit late to enter for that.
Yeah.
But
I'll put some places and dates on my web page. And if anybody wants to go and join in, or if they've got the facilities, they can get in touch with me, and yeah, we can organise a clinic. I do them in groups of four. Yeah, seems to work.
Hope someone reaches out to you because then it's worth you going on.
Yeah.
But anyway, so what I really wanted to talk to you about today is something I find really fascinating is a couple of the top show jumpers' best horses, and you know where they came from, what they were like. So just sort of like the in depth of those top horses, of which everyone knows how hard it is to obtain and just keep them, you know, on the road. And I think the perfect place to start is It's Otto, your Olympic companion. So first question is, how did you come about acquiring him?
I had an old owner from years ago called Gerard Lever. And I hadn't ridden for him for 20 years. He'd had riders at home. Mm. He used to get me in to help his daughter collect in the early days. And that's when I rode for him in the beginning. Then he rang me up and he said, I've got two very good six-year-olds, I think, and I want you to have them. So I told him how much I charged. And he said, oh, I'm not paying that. He said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you half the horses. I said, yeah, all right, that sounds good. One was called Mancuso, and the other one was It's Otto. He'd won £100 when I got him, and he had a big freaky jump, but he just couldn't control his body at all.
Really?
Sometimes he'd jump into a double and nearly land on the second part. Other times he'd land short, and there's no consistency.
So what did you do about that?
Just kept taking him to shows, and he soon got to know the rules. They want all the fancy training that we do nowadays. All I had, I got the front field, which is clay, so it was either up to your axles in mud, or rock hard.
Yeah, so same as ours at home.
I didn't jump him a lot at home. I've got a very small indoor school, like a converted cow shed, or I take him around the roads.
And yeah, you know, at that sort of stage, did you think what did you think his limit would be? Did you think that there was always that top end there, or was it just really hard to tell?
I was excited every time I jumped him. I got excited. He'd do all sorts of weird and wonderful things. You know, he's got his own style. Even when he got there, people would look and say, oh, he's loose in front, he twists. But, you know, he wasn't classical, but he's just careful with scope and wanted to please you.
That's all you want, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when was it, did you think, was there a particular moment or a class that you thought, right, this horse is, you know, going to take me to jump on Nations Cup teams?
You know what it's like, Will. You never can say how good they are till they're doing it. I'd have, you know, even now I get loads of people ringing up saying, I've got an Olympic horse. I say, you haven't. Because those people that are saying it, they don't know what the Olympic horses are like.
Yeah, exactly.
I think when I, at the end of his seven-year-old year, I started taking him on the continent with me. Rhapsody was my best horse at the time, and I took Otto as a second horse, and as soon as I started going, they all started running about and taking notice then.
So what was his first big class that he did really well in?
I can remember they had a show at Glasgow in 1994. And I think the Grand Prix at that show was the first big class I'd ever jumped him in. And he'd gone well all week, and I think he had one down in that, but we started to get excited by then.
But then
to be honest, he always came out the stable a bit stiff. And we started to get him checked out by now. He's got three chips in his stifle.
Really?
So the best vet in Europe, a fellow called Leo De Backer, that was Jan Topsy's vet. And Leo said I needed to send him to a place called Telgte near Dortmund. And I remember the fellow that specialised in taking the chips out was a fellow called Dr. Boyning. And, you know, taking chips out in those days, like, it wasn't like it is now. Now they do them 10 a penny, but it was fairly specialised job then.
I think that was a bit worrying then, if you thought you'd had a really good horse and, you know,
it was, but you could see in time, it had OCD, and it was going to bother him. So we had the three chips taken out, and It never really bothered him again. We might have treated him twice a year, but that would have been it.
And then, obviously, after that, the Nations Cups came thick and fast. What was his first Nations Cup appearance like?
He had a clear on four in Barcelona.
Yeah.
It was where they'd had the 1992 Olympics on the polo ground. And, I'm just trying to remember who was on the team. I know Guy Goosen was on the team.
Yeah.
I think Nick Skelton. Guy, Nick, me, and I can't remember who the fourth one was. But, that was the start of it.
Yeah. And then
as an 8-year-old, he got picked as reserve to go to the World Championships in Den Haag.
Do you remember who was in front of you then?
Kelly Brown.
I
can remember Kelly Brown, and it would have been probably John Michael and Nico, would have, I guess.
He wouldn't be far off anyway.
I can remember. I knew I was reserve. And there was some money in the warm-up class. They had two warm-up classes, so I went, and Otto won the first one. And I took Rhapsody as well, and he had the last fence down to win the second one. So I did that. Loaded all the other second horses up because they couldn't stay on the show field, and I drove home.
Very good. So then you managed to get your first championship, I'm guessing. Well, would that have been 95?
That was 94 was the World Championships. 95, he was picked, and then we thought he'd got pus in his foot. And the championships got nearer and nearer, and a week away, and we thought he'd got pus in his foot. That's what my local vet was doing, and we were doing. I was ringing everybody to see what I could do, and I rang Harvey Smith. And he said, stand it in fresh cow shit. So I was going down to the local farm, getting bucket full of cow buck, bringing them back. My car frigging stunk. Standing him in. And then Leo De Backer's assistant, called Mark Souls, he was doing all the top horses by then. And he came over, and it was nothing to do with pushing his foot. He'd got an infection in his fetlock joint. He had him found in 3 days, but it was too late then, so we missed the Europeans in 95. That's the ones that Peter Charles won. And then the year after 96 was the Atlanta Olympics.
The Olympic experience on him.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. Because he was, he was 10 years old, so he was naive, but coming into his prime. And he missed a medal by a whisker. He had a fence down that he would normally never have a fence down. It was a gate over a water tray, and at water trays he'd normally go higher. But he jumped that big in front, he just touched it behind. And then we went into a jump off. There wasn't a double clear in the individual. I had run down that down the first round and then jumped clear the second round. And then it was only Uli Kirchhoff. He had a clear and a time fault the second round.
Yeah.
So I think about five or six of us jumped off with silver and bronze. And he had exactly the same fence down with the same leg, the same way in the jump off. And I finished sixth.
That's getting.
So Michael Whittaker came over yesterday for a barbecue, and the drunker he got, the more he kept reminding me how close I was to a medal.
And I'm making you relive it again, which I'm sure is great for you.
There you go. I'll tell you what we were saying, Will. We were saying, just imagine if I'd won a gold medal. Just think of the adverts I could have got. Jeff Billington drinks 12 pints of Guinness a day. And they also eat so many meat and potato pies. And they've gone down roads that no Olympic champion's ever been down.
Yeah, so, that round in the Olympics, I'm guessing, you know, what one of my questions I wanted to ask, if you could have ridden one round again on him. I'm guessing
it's got to be that, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's got to be that.
Yeah, it couldn't be. Is there any others that spring to mind out of curiosity?
We're in Dublin one year, and it's in Dublin. It's always more or less the English against the Irish. Oh yeah, everybody else has teams, but that's a rivalry. And I can remember coming to the last fence, and it was a St Andrew's cross, and he jumped and twisted, and he jumped me clean off, and I landed flat on my back about 10 yards before the finishing post. There were 30,000 Irish all clapping and cheering. I've never been bought as many pints of Guinness as I did that night.
So it was worth it then.
For one day in my life, I'd have forfeited the alcohol.
That's fantastic. Well, anyway, I think Otter obviously was a fantastic horse for you, and you know, as you're saying now, you know, unbelievable. And you know, just very quickly before we move to your next horse, what was he like, and what was his personality like? Did he have any quirks? What was
no,
he like?
It was really quirky.
Was he?
You know, to get him up the road, he would not, if you took him on his own, he would not go past the next farm. And he'd get to the point of, he'd lose all self-preservation. So there was this horse worth a fortune. And I tried a couple of times, taking a big stick and trying to beat him up the road, but you'd finish up in the ditch and he'd be threatening to lie down on the road. And so in the end, I always took something to give him a lead. Yeah, he'd go in any ring around the world, and he wouldn't spook. I can remember the European Championships in 1999 at Hickstead. And the combination was the double of ditches, one stride to a big vertical.
So. It's fine at that, but wouldn't walk up the road. It's so many good horses are like that, though. They have funny quirks, and I personally think that that's what makes those horses so special.
I do.
If they're too easy, I don't think they quite have that fight in them.
I totally agree with you, though.
Yeah.
It's if you can channel it, they're the champions.
Definitely. So. Another horse which brought you one of your biggest wins in your career, and will probably start on that day. And, you know, your famous derby battles, especially between Will Funnel and Mondrian, and you and your grey Casabacus.
Yeah.
So what were those battles like with Funnel there?
I can remember, I think it was probably the year. Well, I think, just remembering back, I was third in 2006. He won it in 2007, and he was second in 2008. I can remember in 2008, it was only me and Will on four faults, waiting to go into the jump-off. We both got off our horses, and we went behind the porter cabin in the collective ring, and we were both having a pee, and they were shouting us into the ring. And Will in his wrong manner says, "Those people at the side of there wouldn't know what we were. They wouldn't know what we were doing now, would they?"
So, you know, obviously, 2007, winning the derby. How was that?
Yeah, it was amazing because first of all, when I got the horse, he was a little sharp. You know, he was probably only 15-3.
Really?
And he was really sharp. He'd had quite a few jockeys before me. I can remember jumping him around newcomers, and he'd have three down on a bad day. And I just said to somebody, "This horse will jump the derby one day." And they looked at me like I'd got three heads. But I don't know why I knew. He was absolutely super brave, I think. I can remember before a Fox Hunter fight, he qualified Fox Hunter final.
Yeah.
And I can remember the night before thinking, I haven't got the tack right on. And I put him in a small pony club hackamore with a standing martingale with a rope noseband. and that transformed him.
Really?
I always rode him nationally with quite a tight Stanley Martingale. Mm. And if I went international, warm him up in the Stanley Martingale, then make it into a run-in just before I went in the ring. Mm. As soon as we came back out, back to the Stanley before he realised he hadn't got it on.
And why did you think that helped him so much?
I don't know. I don't know. It probably held him together, I suppose.
Mm.
But he was a compact little chap anyway, but it just seemed to help him.
Mm.
But there you go.
Yeah. So, like you said, there are quite a lot of riders before you. Yeah. How did you come to get him?
Lady Rowallan from Scotland had rang me up, and she said we want your James to come and ride for us.
Yeah.
And James was probably 16, and I said, well, you're a bit too late. He's going riding for Michael Whittaker. She said, we've got a couple of horses here. Would you ride him then? I said, well, yeah, send them and I'll have a look. And I finished up riding a couple for them. And, he was still, as I said, in newcomers.
Yeah.
And he was a nice horse. I wouldn't have said he was a superstar at that stage, but fabulous around the Derby. You know, like your mum's horse, Promised Land.
Yeah.
Leaves. That was his.
Rose for the occasion.
Yeah.
And, another horse you mentioned earlier, Rhapsody. You said you're one of your first top horses. Yeah, what was that horse like?
There was a lady called Sally Mapleton, very good rider, rode on a lot of British teams.
Mm.
And she got two Irish horses, Rhapsody and Airborne. And she produced them to 9 years old, and then she decided she was giving up.
Mm.
So she gave them both to Nick Skelton. And Airborne fitted into Nick's system perfectly.
Mm.
And Rhapsody hated it. And she rang me crying one day. She said, Nick says he'd never ride this horse again. It's a piece of whatever. Will you have a go? So I said, yeah, I'll have a go. So I rang John at that stage. And I said, I've got that Rhapsody coming. What do you think? He said, whatever you do, don't try and tie it down with draw reins or anything. It hates it. So I got it and I went a couple of months and didn't really win anything. And then again, led in bed one night and I thought, there's got to be a way for this horse. It wouldn't shorten. So I took its martingale off, put a long elevator bit in it. And I thought, if it won't shorten when I take a pull that way, I'll yank his head up. So if his head goes high enough up, he's got to shorten his stride, you know, that way.
Mm.
And I think he came out and he won the trial at Bath and West the day after. And he finished up winning £150,000, he did, Rhapsody. Yeah, he was a great horse. I could jump him in any class.
Mm.
He'd jump everything from Grand Prix to knockouts, boys arms. Mm. He'd jump around the Derby. And he was, for some reason, I don't know why, but we had him x-rayed as a 9-year-old when I first got him.
Mm.
And he was riddled with navicular.
Really?
He never had one needle stuck in him. The best he jumped was on the harder the ground, the better he jumped, and he never took one lame step in his life. And he jumped until he was 21.
It is funny that, isn't it? So that so many horses that you hear fail the vet or whatever reason. And, you know, they end up being some of the soundest horses. And then you get horses that pass absolutely perfectly.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, you're riddled with problems and you don't know what's going on.
No,
it really is weird, but you know, Rhapsody. So that was one big question that I wanted to ask you. Like coming from Nick Skelton, obviously everyone knows Nick being an unbelievably successful rider. He Olympic champion at 56 or whatever he was, and won countless Grand Prix.
Mm.
And why do you think that horse? And it's more of a bigger question than that, because it's. Certain horses fit with certain riders, and we all know that. But it's tough to explain that some people who might not like some you sometimes see a top rider or a good rider get rid of a horse, and then it go really well for an amateur rider. And why? Mm. So Nick and you obviously have both have extreme success, but why do you think a horse that ended up being as good for you just didn't seem to fit with Nick?
Probably because I'm lazier. I'm Jeff Billington PM. Nick would be up at 6 o'clock in the morning, working the hell out of him. Rhapsody was the same as me. He didn't like getting out of bed till after 12 o'clock lunchtime. he was another quirky one.
Yeah.
If you didn't, sometimes if he went to get on him, if he put his back up, I'd jump off him straight away, and I'd just lunge him for a couple of minutes, and then he'd be all right. So if you worked him, he hated it.
Really?
So I can remember we were in Berlin, which was a big World Cup show, in the indoor, and I never used to get on before, like probably six to go. And I got on him and he put his back up. Oh, I'm in trouble now. So they're shouting, Jeff Billington, six to go, five to go, four to go. And I'm still lunging it round and clattering with the reins. I can remember John Popley was there. What are you doing, mate? I said, he's not ready for me to get on yet. He says, they're shouting you down the tunnel. I got on, jumped two fences, went in the ring. And his nickname was Rodeo.
That's really? Really?
He'd done it all his life. That's where he got his nickname from.
You wouldn't have liked to have broken in then?
No.
Oh, dear. No, it's really fascinating, though, that some horses just do suit different people. And yeah, that is, I know that's a classic example, because you'd think, right, Nick Skelton would perfect with any horse. And I think Nick actually, I heard him talk about a horse that didn't quite go as well for John, that went really well for Nick. And it's weird how, horses find different riders, and just it works out in the balance of things.
Just going back to myself and your dad had a very good horse called Praycon. And it never, ever, ever knocked a vertical down with your dad, but it would sometimes chip a back bar on an oxer. And then I got it after. And with me, it would have a vertical down, but always jump the oxers. And that's just two of us,
Yeah.
Two different styles, two different... It was a good horse with both of us.
Yeah.
But that's just how it goes.
It is fascinating when you look at the grand scheme of things. So last horse that I'm gonna touch on just before we turn to a couple of older stories from back in the day, is Rosinus, one of your last championship appearance.
Yeah.
And so how did that horse come about for you to be riding him?
I've got a very good friend called Mike Rowlands, and he deals well. We both had a good friend in Germany called Ernst Hofschroer. And Mike rang me up excited. His partner, Lucy Henderson, rides his horses. And she's a very slight lady. And Mike rang me up. He said, I've got that, that good horse that Ernst had for his daughter, and he sold it for a lot of money. And he sold it to an amateur, and she wasn't good enough to ride him, really. He was only 15-3. He said, I've got that coming. Ernst has sent it me. So I can remember they took it to its first show at Southview, indoors, jumped it, went to go in the Fox Hunter, non-competitive, and it stopped at the first fence, got eliminated. So that night, Mike's calling it every name under the sun. This is going on the first boat back to Germany, the dirty little mongrel. Ernst rang me that night. He said, Jeff, go and pick this horse up. It's not for little girls to play with anymore. So I went and picked it up. And he wanted £14,000 for it. And I'd had it two or three months, and I got it going, jumping sort of 130s. And he was so careful and scope.
Really?
And he was probably 9 years old at that stage. So my wife, Sarah, said, I think we better be buying that horse, And, there'll be a job for that somewhere. We'd sell it to a young rider. Anyway, I got him. We bought him. And he got better and better and better and better. And he went to, I think we went to, he asked me to go to Linz for the for his First Nations Cup. And yeah, he went well. And that year, he went on 6 Super League Nations Cups. He jumped clear in the Grand Prix in Calgary. He won the Eindhoven Derby. Fantastic horse. At the Europeans at Hickstead, I was 52nd or 53rd to go in the team competition. And there wasn't a clear round when I went in the ring. I think he jumped clear with a time fault.
Really?
Fabulous horse. And it were the last class of the year in the Grand Prix. And he landed over a fence and tripped up and put his other leg out to stop himself falling over. And I came out with 4 faults. And it was the year when it snowed hard at Olympia. There was just myself and Scott Brash. We stayed overnight. And I went in the morning, he got a massive leg. We tried and tried to get him sound for the next 18 months. And he never... So we retired him.
Absolutely gutting.
Yeah. That was around the time when your mum had just got Hello Sailor. You know, they were the two horses to watch at the time.
Yeah, how old would have he been then?
Oh no, well that would have been that. It'd probably be 10 in 2009.
Oof.
So, yeah,
that's horrendous, because especially like the last horses just come round so.
He'd won. By the July that year, he'd won £60,000, so he'd well paid for himself.
Yeah.
But everything went in one movement. Yeah. There you go.
And that's that. No, that's not exactly the happiest story.
No, but that's what happens. That's what you've got to. It's just one of them things. When you're working with horses, you get highs and lows.
No, and it's that you get those horses just come around so little, and it's just so gutting when something like that. We had Holly Smith on last week, and she talking about Heart's Destiny, which, you know, just had to be put down, which is just horrendous. And like this year, we've lost. Just recently, Steve Gerd, that's Bianca, Nicola Philippart's Chilly Willy, and Frederick Johnson's Coldplay. It really is a tough sport when it gets to there, because you put so much effort.
And there were three different sort of freak things, weren't they?
Yeah.
Bianca, didn't she have a tumour or something on her brain?
Yeah, tumour.
Chilly Willy broke its leg in the lunch pen.
Yeah. Same as Coldplay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's lovely, nice and cheerful
Let's lighten things up, Will.
Let's lighten things up. Well, so obviously back in the day, there's you're pretty well known for some of your stories you'd tell about some of the shenanigans, shall we say, that happened in the
we definitely have the best times, I think.
So go on, some of the ones that aren't too graphic. What were some of the best times at shows?
It was like a party every week. You know, we were all mates going. We'd just go out and have a good time, and win a few quid along the way.
We could ask for more.
You know a lot of the stories because your dad's one of my best mates. He'll have told you a few. I've just thought of a story we should have told you now. So there's me and your dad left in the final round of the Puissance at the Horse of the Year show. Your dad was on a horse called Double Brandy, and I had a mare called Snowdonia that used to jump the Puissances. So we're riding round, and we heard Tom Hudson, the commentator in Wembley Arena. He said, "The wall has gone up to 7 foot." And at that point, my horse lifted its tail up and started to have a dump. So your dad burst out laughing. He said, "Bloody hell, I didn't realise that horses could understand English." I said, "It's all right for him. He can get rid of his. I'm sat in mine."
Who won?
I can't remember. Snowdonia never won the pre-season, so it was the usual, so your dad must have won. People keep saying to me, you should write a book, I'm starting. We've got something, we are starting, but it'll have to be the edited version.
Too incriminating.
Some of the things that we did, you know, people wouldn't believe it.
Mm.
But it did happen.
What about some of the fancy dress that you did at Olympia?
Yeah, well, it started off in the early years. I used to go with Michael, and Nick would go with John. But then I was always, me and John took it very seriously, and we wanted to rehearse and everything around the back. So in the end, we swapped partners. So me and John went together, and Nick and Michael. And then there was a time when all four of us, we used to group them together, and all four of us would go. But John always needed he needed a little bit of whiskey or something just to get him, you know, loosened up.
To be led astray.
And there was one year, and I can remember he was on Randy, a great stallion.
Mm.
And I think he'd just got his mixture wrong before he went in. And he came in the collector ring, and I thought, he's drunk, he is. And then I knew he was drunk when he started riding flat out at the curtains before they owned it. The horse was just pulling up in front of the curtains. We went in the ring. And because we were all dressed up, we'd be dressed up as two women, I would think. Dressing up as women. We'd sort of looked at the course through the curtains. We got all the regalia on. And it was easy enough. You know, one had jumped six fences one way. You'd pass the stick over. And the other one would jump the six fences going the other way. So we rode in the ring, and how many thousands does Olympia hold? 12,000 or something.
Mm.
So we rode in, and John's saying to me, well, I was on a mare, and he's riding up behind me on the stallion, and the stallion's going, I'm saying, get away. He's saying, what's the course? I said, John, look at the course. Do you know the course? I don't know the course. What's the course? Get that stallion away from me. So I jumped the first six fences, went to pass the baton over to him, and it was near the collector ring. And he bent down he dropped the stick, he bent down to pick it up. The lads dragged him off the horse in front of the thing. Michael put the wig on, jumped on his horse, and Michael jumped right around the course. He thought John wasn't fit to ride. And he got pulled in front of the stewards the day after and got his hands smacked. But that's the fun that we had.
Oh, no, that's a very good story to finish on. Well, anyway, thank you so much for joining us today, Jeff. That was great.
All right, well,
really interesting to hear a couple of those stories and how some of those top horses came into your hands and how they went on through the year. So thank you so much for joining us, and I'm sure we'll speak soon.
Thanks, Will. Cheers. Regards to your mum and dad.
Thank you very much.
All right. Cheers.
Thank you so much to Jeff for coming on to the podcast this week. Now, it was great to hear from him, and hopefully we'll be seeing him out at shows soon. And make sure you catch up on his clinics to see that they're extremely popular. And just try and look at his website and go on there and catch up where he'll be, because he gives some excellent training. So thank you so much to Jeff, and thank you again for listening. Please make sure you rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends, let the podcast get out, and... yeah, thank you very much, and we'll be back next week on Friday.